Good afternoon. It is one bell of the afternoon watch, and this is your Captain Joe up in the captain's chair. And I am going to start the broadcast by a commentary about Susan's program that always precedes mine, and most of the time is live, and this time she had it live, and she had it with two personal friends with whom I worked for a number of things for the good of the island community. And the picture that they laid out is one of cautious optimism. And in particular, Dr. Gornall, if you listen to the program and you heard Tag Gornall, Dr. Gornall, DVM, one of the world's leading experts on such things as orca whales, and also just a good guy. And he left the program with the last remark, and that was, don't blame other people, look into yourself. And of course, this has always been my theme. And that's what we're going to do for the broadcast today. I'm hopeful that, not only hopeful, but I will make it so that at the end of our half hour together, you feel just a little bit better about yourself and about the world in which we live. But many thanks to the lovely Susan for getting those three people together, because it was not only a very interesting program, but they're people who know about which they're talking. And so I'm going to tell a Carlista Rickerson story, because Carlista and I worked together on, among many things that we worked together, was the low tide celebration that we had every year. We had to pass it up twice, and I'm hopeful that we're going to be able to do it this next year, where we all four gather out at Point Robinson on one of the lowest tide days on a weekend. And in particular, it's for the children. So one year, Carlista and I decided that we wanted to have a touch tank. And so we mustered a big tank and we set it up on the beach. But the day that we decided to bring in the salt water to fill the tank was one of the lowest tides for that particular year. Now, of course, that's what we want. We want the lowest possible tide so that we can get, in particular, the children out onto the sand flats out where the starfish are. But this was also the day that we picked to fill the tank. And we kept walking and running hose and walking and running hose. And we practically walked over to Federal Way on the other side of Puget Sound before we got to deep enough water where we could pick up suction to fill the tank. Every time I see Carlista, we remind each other of touch tank, and it was that year that we decided that the touch tank was more trouble than the benefit that came out of it. And so next year when we do the low tide celebration, which I am confident and hopeful that we will, we get about 1,000 people coming from all over Puget Sound. It's a wonderful event. It is that price which is so beloved of island people. It is free. And it's put on by island people for not just island people, but for people all over Puget Sound. When we're able to do it and we get a date, I will, of course, start publicizing it here. Greetings to everybody all over the world, from Stockholm to Singapore. And I have to announce that at least part of my Stockholm family is here on the mainland. Dr. and Professor Mark and his son Tim are visiting with Mark's dad up in Bellingham and will be down here with me this coming weekend. And unfortunately, they have to leave before I could get them on the broadcast. But even having them in the same country means that we will be able to spend some time together. And I will have a report next week of the things that we're able to accomplish together. The Binnacle List comes today with no special notices, and therefore I am just pointing out that There are always people on the binnacle list. The lovely Susan is getting herself suited up to venture out into rainy Vashon wearing her designer mask. And she'll be back to do her electronic magic for me when I'm finished with the broadcast. And for that, I thank her every single week that she is here. So the binnacle list has no particular entries this week, except for me to say, as I always do, that we minimize the effects of the binnacle list by everybody getting vaccinated. And in particular, now that boosters are available to get boosted, and in particular, now that we are beginning to be able to see that lighthouse over the horizon for our children, that they also should be getting the shot. And I move quickly from that into a wonderful message that I had from a shipmate. And I am going into my the Andy phone to bring up the traffic. So this is from a shipmate in the most literal sense, a shipmate from Ingham, who was with me in Vietnam. And a shipmate, by definition, is someone who is more concerned about his mates and about his ship than he is about himself. And Petty Officer Humphreys was with me with Ingham and his lovely lady Margaret in Ingham in Key West. And I had this wonderful message in my traffic from him this morning. Good morning, Captain Joe. Since returning from Key West, I've enjoyed immensely listening to your From the Captain's Chair broadcasts on Radio Vashon. From what I've heard so far, I rather suspect you have covered the question I am about to ask. Nevertheless, having done more than 1,000 radio and television programs similar in format to yours, I learned early on not to ignore the audience because there were always new listeners abound. And I'll make a parenthetical insertion here, Josh, that I picked up some new listeners just this morning. And so you are absolutely right. And not only do I be concerned about picking up new listeners, but I am even more concerned about those who are steadfast and true and listen every week. I listen to what is important to them, what they want me to cover, and even those things that maybe they wish I would not. End of parenthetical insertion. So back to Josh's message. So here's the deal. You have mentioned several times in the past that you have served in a particular ship rather than on her. I'm guessing there might be some lore which dictates in over on. If so, might you take a moment on the broadcast to clarify? I always assumed I served on Ingham since I boarded her on the quarterdeck and saluted our colors from there as well. Parenthetical insertion again, the tradition and the custom is that when you come aboard a ship, you first of all salute the colors and then you salute the quarterdeck, the symbolic ceremonial place representing the command herself. End of parenthetical insertion. I so enjoyed seeing and chatting with you at Key West. Miss Margaret sends warm greetings as well. She was so impressed with your warm and caring demeanor. Fair winds and following seas, Captain. With great respect, Josh. So, Petty Officer Humphreys, I have to tell you that sometimes the warmth and caring demeanor fail. And I am not always those things as I would always want and like to be. However, the answer to your question is this, that we do indeed serve in ships. And the reason for this is that once we ended straddling that log, which of course you sail on, when man first wanted to get across that river, he straddled a log to do that. But once the log got hollowed out, and it then had a shape and form into which one could get. The custom, and I am certain that it started with the Royal Navy. Many of our customs that we observe today came to us from the Royal Navy. And in fact, our Navy was patterned and modeled on the Royal Navy. And we observe many of those customs traditions today. And one of them, which I choose to always follow, is that I sail in ships, I serve in ships, because it is inside the ship that we are safe from danger if the ship is being properly managed and handled. We do stand on the quarterdeck, which is the ceremonial center of the ship. It's the place where when you are boarding a Navy or Coast Guard ship, you first reach the quarterdeck. And originally, the quarterdeck was all the way aft, and it was on the quarters, or the port and starboard corners of the ship aft. Those were the, and that's where the term quarterdeck comes from. So I observe that custom. It is not always followed. Many people say that they sail on a ship. I would not go so far as to say that is lubberly. I would go so far, however, to say that for me to use that term would be lubberly in my own way, and therefore I always serve in a ship, and I hope that all people who listen to Captain Joe from the Captain's Chair will also agree with me that we serve in and serve in ships that to which we belong. On to the ferry system. I happen to be a frog with the ferry system. I am a member of a group called the Ferry Riders. I think O stands for organization and G golf stands for group. And I am one of those who, when the ferry system wants to genuflect in the direction of public comment, they send out questionnaires. Now, I hold no illusions that the ferry system pays any attention to the comments that any of us make, in particular when it comes time to raise the fares. They send out these questionnaires saying, what do you think about raising the fares? And all of us who are frogs say, what I think about raising the fares is how about improving the value for money? But of course, we are not particularly paid that much attention to about that. However, this particular one came to me last week, and it says, we want you to help us name the new ferry. We're building a ferry with a hybrid plant, which means to me that it's probably a diesel electric plant. And so they gave us six names that are under consideration. One of those names is Muckleshoot. Now, the Muckleshoot tribe is one of the Pacific Northwest tribes. It is one of the most active in the use of casino-generated funds. And I have every respect and regard for all of the tribes which make up the Salish community. But I think that the choice of the Muckleshoot would be unfortunate, not because it would not do honor to the Muckleshoot tribe, but because the word muck has certain connotations which are not at all connected to anything tribal, but come from actually, I think, probably from England. And since the ferry system is mucking about these days, in a number of ways, two of which I'm going to get to in just a moment, I put Muckleshoot all the way at the bottom. We were asked to rank order the first, the six. And my first choice was Snoqualmie, the Snoqualmie tribe. There's Snoqualmie Falls here in the Pacific Northwest, all worthy of honor in a new ferry. But the ferry system has done two things just in the last week, which have increased my lack of regard for its management. This first one is that they have shut down one of the slips. Now, by definition, a slip in ferry terminology is the opening into which the ferry is driven. And so far as I'm aware, the word slip is used only in with ferries. And a slip is formed by pilings, which are driven into the bottom, and those pilings are called dolphins. So the north end of Vashon Island has three of these slips. One of them is perpetually occupied by a boat which is out of service. The other two are the ones that are actively being used. The ferry system has now decided, for mechanical reasons, to take one of those slips out of service, which means that unless they use the slip where they have a boat parked, we have only one, and that means that they have to wait. Boats have to wait to get in and out because we've got boats that are going back and forth between among Fauntleroy, Vashon, and Southworth, what's called a triangle route. So they've chosen to leave that boat, which is in the waiting station that is just not being used right now. They've chosen not to move her someplace else and use that particular slip. And so we're up to just one slip on the north end of the island. So that's the first thing that they've done. Somebody should have been able to figure out, well, we just move the one that's in that holding slip, just move her to Eagle Harbor or someplace else. There are lots of places they could put her. And then we still have two slips. Not so. One slip, what we have up north. The other thing is that the schedule changes, which have been put into place because of the inability of the ferry system to recruit and retain, even on retainer, enough Coast Guard documented people to man the boats, those schedule changes remain in effect. So that's why I put Muckleshoot at the bottom of the pile, because of the word that they are mucking about with our ferry system. And I remain standing by for that call to come and help them sort all of this out. And the first thing I would do is ride on the bridge every single one of those routes. Then I would ride down in the engine room every single one of those routes. And I would ride on the car deck every single one of those routes and figure out what we can do to make some changes so that those things don't keep on happening. Today is the last day for you to vote. In my own home state, the Commonwealth of Virginia, there is a very closely contested race for governor. And all over the country, there are a number of really important races, elections going on. If you haven't voted and you think, well, today's the last day, it's not going to make any difference, some of these races are going to end up being so close that those ballots that come in all the way up to the deadline may be the ones that will tip it one way or the other. I urge you, if you have not yet done it, to go ahead and cast that ballot. Get it in before whatever the deadline is in your particular jurisdiction. The secret ballot is one of the most sacred obligations and privileges that we have as citizens of this great land that I continue to serve even at this point in my life. So I'm urging everyone to do two things. Vote, and if you are not yet boosted, get that booster, and when you've got the ability to get your children vaccinated, children, grandchildren, make that so as well. Some good news up in the Great Lakes, and this comes to me from G Captain, which is, of course, as I have said a number of times, one of my favorite sources of marine information. And I thank Joe Leonard for putting me onto that many months ago. The Fincantieri Bay Shipbuilding Company in Sturgeon Bay, they can call it Fincantieri if they want, but it is the old Bay Shipbuilding Company in Sturgeon Bay, Wisconsin, built a number of ships for the Great Lakes and for the Coast Guard. And they were bought by Fincantieri, I believe an Italian holding company, but they can't fool me. It's the same old Bay Shipbuilding Company in Sturgeon Bay. And they built and have just put into the water the first U.S.-flagged Great Lakes freighter in 40 years. She belongs to Interlake Steamship, and the name of this ship is Mark W. Barker, named for, I believe, that Mark Barker is the CEO for Interlake. And She is not a particularly large ship, but the fact that she is the first one to be built to be operated in the under the U.S. flag in the American Great Lakes, carrying bulk cargo, iron ore. She can carry anything that can be moved in bulk. She can load and unload herself. She's got a self-unloading boom. And she is the typical bluff bow that is now so characteristic of Great Lakes ships. But I've seen a photograph of her, and she's in the typical Interlake maroon livery. And NG Captain is a photograph of her. And in the background is the former U.S. Steel ship, Roger Blau. Now, I've talked about Roger Blau before. Roger Blau is one of my favorites because when I was running convoys of ore boats with my Northwind from Duluth down to the mill cities on the south shore of Lake Erie, Roger Blau was one of my hardest working ships. And when I could put her in a convoy, I would always put her in the best place for her to keep everybody else moving. It was Roger Blau's captain who pointed out to me that when you're smelling the bottom, that is the term, by the way. Susan is looking at me with some skepticism on that point. When you are smelling the bottom, the way you can tell if you are smelling the bottom close aboard is to go down into the captain's cabin and flush the toilet. And if the mud comes up into the water because you use lake water in the Great Lakes or seawater at sea for flushing water. And if you get mud in the toilet, then you know that you are very close to the bottom. And so I was working Roger Blau through the western end of Lake Erie and felt like I was kind of scraping along the bottom. And I called over to Roger Blau, and I said, are you having a little bit of scraping? And he said, yes, I am. And he said, go down and flush your toilet in the captain's cabin, and if you get mud, then you'll know that you are pretty close. And I did, and I was. So Roger Blau has been laid up for some time. She had a serious fire, and she has been laid up. I keep hoping that she'll be brought back into service. But I kind of doubt now that that is going to happen, which means that she probably will be scrapped. The book for today is written by a friend. It is called Under Construction, Healing Trauma While Building My Dream. And the Julia Anderson is the name of the young lady who wrote the book. She uses a name, Julia Harriet, as the author's name for the book. And it is, Julia was one of my caretakers out at Point Robinson. And this book describes some terrible things that happened to her in her life. and how she recovered from those things using the construction of a building as a metaphor for rebuilding her life. She dedicates it to her two children. And one of those children, Maribel, was my co-performer in a reconstruction of my lighthouse tour that we did, and you can find it on Voice of Vashon. You can see that that film clip when it comes up. And so I'm recommending the book. I'm not going to get into any details about the book because I'm hopeful that I can get Julia to come on with me and talk about the book by herself. But she dedicates the book to Mirabel and Docton, and it's a lovely dedication. Just reading the dedication is enough to get you to go and either get the book from your library or even to go ahead and purchase it, probably from Amazon. But in any case, the name of the book for this week is Under Construction, Healing Trauma While Building My Dream. The author is Julia Harriet. She is one of Captain Joe's people, as are her children, and as is her ex-husband as well. And we've talked about him and about the restaurant that he is a partial owner of, called Ruby Brink, here in the on the magical isle of Vashon. The there's been more discussion of Bonhomme Richard, and as the investigation is more and more of it is made public, more and more of it is so sad as to how the ship was treated so badly. And in the final analysis, I can, as a commanding officer, as a captain of considerable experience, and having had each one of the six ships that I commanded in the shipyard, I can identify with the problems that you have when you are the commanding officer of a ship in the shipyard. And all of that should have caused this captain to be particularly aware and particularly attentive to his duty. And in the final analysis, I can lay this one at the feet, at the command insignia that captain was wearing. And there will be more of this as we get farther into the investigation, and I'm able to read more of it. But back to good news. The hulk of the Revenue Cutter Bear, which was commanded by Roaring Mike Healy in Alaska, she sank when she was under tow after World War II, and the hulk has been found. I doubt that there will be any attempt to bring her up. She's a wooden hull, and she would probably break apart if she were brought up. I will continue to follow that particular story. Mike Healy is a great character, and if you want to read some interesting information about a person who was, if there was ever a person who was flawed in his personality, Roaring Mike Healy was it. And I am suggesting that you call him up in any one of the good search engines. But of course, the Coast Guard cutter Healy is named for him, for whom I am her sea daddy. And I see now that Truman is right behind me, and he is about ready to give me the cut signal. So it is time for me to say that we meet again here once every week. We meet from the captain's chair. And I remain, as always, your Captain Joe, up in the chair, on station, and watching properly.